Welcome to MSP 1337. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, a show dedicated to cybersecurity challenges, solutions, a journey together, not alone. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of MSP 1337. I'm joined this week by Parandar Das with Zotero. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. My pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
I appreciate you taking the time out for our audience. So one of the things that we always want to do is anytime we have a guest, especially someone that hasn't been on the show before, is if you could just tell the audience a little bit about yourself, kind of your path to where you are today. I would love to hear you talk a little bit about Zotero. I'm very interested in what you guys are doing over there. And then we'll jump into your topic and I'll let you share that with the audience.
Sounds good, Chris. Thank you. As you said, I'm Parandar Das. I'm co-founder and CEO of Zotero. We are a Boston-based startup, and I like to tell people that we are broadly in the cybersecurity space, but more specifically focused on data security. Obviously, the question is, how did I get here, right? Or how did we get here? The bulk of my career has been in marketing and marketing technology. I have been the CTO at two of the largest marketing services providers in this country, and one of them is actually one of the largest in the planet. What that did for me was expose me to two things. One was data management at scale. When you talk about building marketing solutions for the largest brands in the country or in the world, we're talking about tens of billions of transactions or records, right, that store sensitive information. The flip side of that is, how do you collect, store, but protect this information while the company is using them to drive their marketing, their customer relationship building? When you put those two things together, we're talking about data security and privacy management at massive volumes. That challenge is what got me and my co-founder started in the data security space, because what we saw was limitations around how to achieve security and privacy at scale that was meaningful, but didn't become an obstacle to enabling companies to operate and access the data. So we kind of looked
send
at
it anyways. Right? They're going to send the data either.
Exactly. Way. Yeah. But with all the regulations coming on board, and the administration, privacy groups becoming more stringent and focused on how to protect the consumer. Addressing the challenge was what got us started. And we said, hey, there's got to be a better way of doing this. The classic, we need to figure out a better way of achieving data security and privacy. That's what got us started on this thing. So we looked at this problem as Zotero and said, most security, if not all of security, is focused on the outside in, meaning locked on the network, locked on access. Which kind of is ironic, because the one thing it didn't really protect was the data or the information itself. We said, why don't we look at it as an inside-out problem and come up with a solution for facilitating this process? And we kind of came up with a patented ability to query encrypted attributes without the need to decrypt them. Right. So kind of sounds very technical and complex, but if you think about it, what it does is elevate data protection from at rest, meaning protect it when nobody's using it, to protect the data while it's being used. So that was our initial foray into this space.
So, I mean, we could just go so many different directions with this, but I think the one that pops out at me, I think about it, and you're going to have to tell the audience what this topic is, but I'm going to throw this out there. I think one of the challenges that we have in protecting data is so many people have become almost desensitized to what is sensitive data. Like they understand what data is. They understand when, you know, like a medical record should probably be protected, but we still see it all the time. Like, sign this document, put your social security number on it, and then scan and email it back to me. And you're like, well, how do I ensure that I'm sending you something that is going to get there securely, let alone like, why do I, like, so many steps are being taken to do something that should not be happening anymore. You shouldn't have to send this stuff around like this.
Yeah, right. Hey, absolutely. Right. I mean, the hacker aspect of it, or the data, the theft aspect of it, has become extremely complex, because the talent and the skills being deployed on that side matches the talent and the skills on the traditional product development or the data management space, right? So no, it's not just, it's one data asset that has your credit card numbers. Sure. They are collating data from a broad base of sources that actually makes that hack or that attack or that criminal attempt so much more sophisticated, where they're actually crafting programs built around the ability to link your data, not just your credit card number, but potentially your medical history, your travel history, and all of this, and build a hack attempt that's so much more sophisticated that it continues to fool people. But it's all based around the fact that they have access to data.
And they're building a profile. So they're not just saying like, exactly, hey, I got your credit card number. They're not, they're like, hey, yeah, that's a win. We would have said that's a win. And if I was a bad guy, having someone's credit card number without them knowing about it, that's at least a win, right? Because I can do something with that. But to your point, we're talking about like, that's just part of the breadcrumb trail that they're using to build something that, exactly, allows for a much larger impact when they finally do deploy their.
Exactly. And even the monetization of that, right? There's the whole, sure, data collation aspect of it, then the sales aspect of it, then the people that are building platforms to leverage those things, providing people code, or even the phishing code, which is the starting point.
Sure. You're depressing me.
It is, but it is reality. That's what, right, we're facing, right? I mean, every day, what's the thing that's consistent every day when you listen to the news or read the news? It's about new hack attempts or new breaches that have occurred.
I think the ones that are worse than the actual breaches to me right now is the doom and gloom of what's going to happen if we don't do something. But then no one says, what should we do? They just kind of leave it out there like, yep, if we don't protect critical infrastructure, know, bad things, yeah, are going to happen. It's like, yeah, that's, yeah, probably true. So what's your suggestion, right? Like give me something to do, and then I can at least take action. Let me be tactical.
So that's where we kind of looked at this and said, hey, this like a multitude of point solutions, right? Network access management, endpoint monitoring, log monitoring is. If you look at this, the one thing that still has not protected is the data. And that's really an operational challenge, because no company wants to introduce a data product because they're under the belief that it slows down commerce or process. The moment there's friction in the process, companies are scared because that means an impact on the revenue. And they go like, oh, we're not going to do anything at the data level because that's going to slow things down. We said, whatever we come up with has to operate at the speed of business. Meaning no impact on the no impact on the business process, or don't create any additional friction so that the business can continue to function, but still be able to provide this level of security and protection that data truly needs, which is one perspective. The second perspective is you can look at it as the ultimate backstop. If everything else fails, your endpoint monitoring fails, they find a new API or a vehicle, a third-party software vehicle that they piggyback on, you want to be able to protect your data in the event something bad happens. We took that approach as an inside-out requirement, and that's what we've done, is provide a layer of protection at the data asset level. Very simply, if you think about all the things that happen at the network level, we achieve all of those at the data level with no impact to business. That's what we do.
So since you didn't tell them, I'm going to say that today's topic is all about protecting your data. Is that a fair...
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, it's all about protecting your data. What can you do to keep your data protected without impacting your business? And that kind of goes into, as you said, it can go in a multitude of directions, right? There is not one single data asset, right?
No, and I think we struggle with that a lot, right? I think you look at anybody that's been in business for more than a few years, you suddenly go, do you know where all your data is? And of course, their question is like, yeah, it's all on the server. And it's like, well, what about the data you sent to other people? What about the data you shared with? In the blank, what about? And all of a sudden they're like, okay, it's in a few places. It's like, well, are you on any social media platforms? Do you, you know, like the information's out there and it's probably everywhere. Like, do you want, yeah, to know? And then maybe knowing where it is less important than knowing how to protect it where it is. I think it would probably be a more comfortable feeling than just saying, I don't necessarily care it's there, I just care that it's protected.
There, yeah. Which you actually bring up a good point, right? That's also a multifaceted or a two-dimensional issue, right? Knowing where the data is and knowing what form the data is in, because you have databases, you have file stores, you have cloud stores, you have small data assets or repositories that think about. So there's the discovery aspect of it and providing a single platform for protecting data in all of its forms everywhere all the time. If you look at our tagline, which is a plug here, but it's also relevant, we say we protect data everywhere all the time.
That raises a question back to what you said earlier about how threat actors are, they're not just getting a credit card and that's it and they're done. It's all the other pieces. And I think this is an interesting, made me think, like, if I think about data and I think about the different types of data, not all data is equal, right? So I'm thinking like, okay, yeah, credit card, that's kind of a big deal. What if it's like I drive a blue Charger? Well, there's lots of blue Chargers, and blue Charger is a data type that is attached to my car, but it's not really that important until you start using that to build that bigger package, because now you've pieced together information about me. And, you know, we were talking about this before the show, like, you know, when you can get access to that information very rapidly. And I think that's why I think we're seeing this new explosion of the doom and gloom of why things like critical infrastructure are suddenly being talked about in the news, and the potential for bad things to happen is because of the way in which they're collecting the information to create the attack. It's not just little, it's all of the little things adding up to a big problem.
Exactly. I mean, it's a question of like, how does security and privacy keep up with innovation, right? Companies, organizations are focused on commercialization or bringing to market new products that drive new revenue. And I kind of cite this all the time. A simple thing like a sprinkler controller, right? We're all excited because that minimizes your water bill, kind of gives you control. We can turn it on, turn it off from wherever. But think about the potential data that a small device like that could be collecting, right? It could essentially predict your routine. It could tell them when they think you're going to be at home, when they think it's going to be vulnerable. You attach that to the fact that you drive a car. It gives you a level of credibility when somebody has a conversation with you and says, "Hey, I know the charger that you drive." Right, it kind of makes you more amenable to start giving them more information than you would if the context wasn't there.
Yeah, I don't want to say IoT is bad. It's not inherently bad, but I think about devices like a thermostat, or to your point, the sprinkler system. And you start piecing those together, and all of a sudden, I know an awful lot about your patterns. Like, you know, you watch the movies and they're like, someone gets kidnapped because they've been following them for weeks. And they know they make the same path to the same coffee shop, the same, you know, every time. Well, what if it doesn't require any sort of physical tracking? We just are literally taking the data bytes that are coming in and saying, oh, we know that they leave the house every day at this time because that's when the lock gets turned on. We know, and we can see through the Ring cameras that no one's home when that happens. Like, suddenly you've built out a pretty extensive and you haven't done anything or gone anywhere.
Yeah, and so that to that point, right? I mean, the company that's selling that information doesn't realize the value or the potential challenge that it's going to raise, right? Because they're selling it to monetize it to another business that says, "Hey, sure, I'm going to leverage this data to sell them more services, and you get a cut of the revenue." Fine, ship them the data, right? Somebody that gets their hands on that data set collates it with someone else, something else, and then immediately, like you said, be able to develop a profile that essentially tells them what you do when you do it and when you're vulnerable.
And I kind of think about, like, if we want to take this to scale, this is not really about, say, attacking an individual or a household, or even residential, commercial, doesn't necessarily matter. But like, what if you were to monitor that level of data set for an entire neighborhood or subdivision or a small city or a large city and start recognizing patterns with things like water consumption or electricity consumption? And then you can start going, well, if we can manipulate those things, then we can control the commerce happening for that city or that, you know, hey, we suddenly, cost of water just went through the roof. Why is everybody talking about a water shortage? Well, there isn't one. We're just talking about one, make you think that it's happening so that people panic.
It's funny you bring that up, because that's so relevant with this notion of the notion of charging price based on the demand, right? It's something, to your point, that with the data, with a data set and with the right analytics, you can create artificial demand and drive up prices. Absolutely.
Yeah. Or at least create confusion in the market so that you don't rely on it anymore, and that can be just as bad too.
Yeah, I
Wow.
mean surge pricing. That's where this is. That's where this starts, right?
So going back in time, thinking about how we would have protected data, I remember I had I think it was the co-founder of Tenable on, and we were talking about security back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and how security was basically do what you're told. And if you get to do some security, that's better than no security. So yes, the marketing department says you're absolutely going to expose the folder to the public internet because otherwise you've created friction. Fast forward to today, obviously a lot of those problems are minimized. We tend to do some of those things better than before. But we've now also introduced things like AI and large language models that allow for that really fast data collection, that data joining data sets together. In fact, in some cases, and I'd love your thoughts on this, on what data sets are talking to other data sets, right? Like, so you use an LLM, and maybe whether it's ChatGPT, I'm not saying that just as an example, but like you use it and you're like, but what other data sets is it talking to that it should or shouldn't be using to help generate what it's going to give me back as an answer?
I think we're at the very, very starting point of data sets within LLMs, right? I mean, I think you mentioned that LLMs have been around for a while, or well, models have been around for a long time. What's given them the power is the available of computing, right? That's kind of became the foundation for collating and digesting, processing a massive amount of data, which was not even
Fast.
like. Right. I mean, you couldn't
Yeah.
even think that that was possible a couple of years
Right.
ago, and
Right.
suddenly it's there. Right. And that has kind of already started concerns about what's in there, right? In
Sure.
that data set that's already publicly available. As these evolve to drive more organizational specific needs, you're gonna see the mingling of truly sensitive data about a consumer's interaction with the company. Right. And that data with the behavior that they've exhibited in the broader open community. So think about all the conclusions and the inferences that can be drawn when you start mixing all this data together with really no safeguards or no
There's no
controls on how,
rules,
no rules. Yeah.
which also means that, garbage in, garbage out. And if you don't have any control over the data sets, then you have literally no control over which ones are garbage and which ones are not, as it puts data back into the output.
And unfortunately, in today's world, garbage out also has a massive impact, and more,
Right.
and quite usually a negative impact on the individual or the organization that's being referenced in that garbage output.
So we've really talked a lot about the negativity. Well, I shouldn't say negativity, the power of AI, the power of compute to get data, get answers. What we really haven't talked about is there a path forward that isn't just us speculating on, if we were to do a better job protecting critical infrastructure, we'd be less worried about bad things happening to it.
So absolutely, there is certainly a path forward, right? And I mean, that's we're happy to be part of that thing, and we're not the only one. There's multiple organizations trying to solve this problem. The first thing is keep data secure. I mean, stop the hackers or the criminals from accessing your data. That's the number one thing, and that relates to not just data, but it also relates to the infrastructure challenge, right? Making sure that they're secure, and making sure they're secure is preventing them from being contaminated, attacked, or being compromised, right?
Sure.
That's a question of real-time monitoring, threat detection, and threat prevention, right? That involves real-time, massive, well, I mean, I won't say massive, but really quick detection of threats on even the smallest of devices, whether it's an IoT or thing, because they normally become the gateway for somebody getting into a network, right?
So
That
to rephrase what you just said, you're essentially saying we've got to monitor everything and act on the things that are out of the ordinary, which as Cetero, doing something like that. But like you said, there's others. Do you think part of this is like getting organizations to recognize that you have to turn them on, you got to monitor? Like, I think there's a lot of still not doing it, like just not doing it at all. Like, or they don't know where
Absolutely.
their infrastructure is spread out. So they're monitoring one network, but they're not monitoring all the networks in their organization.
Monitoring, and I we can relate that to saying monitor all of the points of access to a network. don't just focus on the laptops that you give out to your employees. There's a multitude of more entry points to your network that you're not thinking about, whether it's API gateways, third-party software that has access. It's not just the laptops and devices. And people say, we've done what we need to do for ransomware protection because we've got our endpoints protected. Your endpoints translates to usually the laptops. There's a lot more, right? Monitor all of those in real time. From a vendor perspective, I think it's equally critical that vendors realize that creating a new software product that requires organizations to completely upgrade their environments for this to be effective is not a solution.
No, it's very cost prohibitive.
Yeah, and it's not practical or feasible to expect an organization to completely rip apart everything. So we've got to build something. We've got to build products and solutions that work in their existing environments.
And I think a good example of that would be like DICOM imaging systems in hospitals where, you know, they're running, you know, legacy operating systems, but the technology still works just like it did when they bought it. It's still doing what it's supposed to do, but the ability to secure it obviously is requiring things to change. We always called it compensating controls, but, you know, compensating controls can get extremely expensive too when that legacy, but to your point, you can't just go and uproot a $15 million solution just because the OS is antiquated in that model. I mean, it's just, you know, hospitals would be going out of business if they had every 3 to 5 years, they had to upgrade that.
Upgrade everything, right? I mean, I'll give you a more practical example. We talked to enterprises as part of our outreach, and we've had enterprises tell us, I mean, I obviously won't mention the name. These are multi-billion dollar companies that say half of our processing is still done on mainframes. Does your product work on the mainframe? And we're, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's part of what we thought about, because we come from the world where organizations use a lot of different technologies to achieve their business outcomes. And we're saying we understand that.
Yeah.
And the product platform we build will always make sure that we work with everything that an organization has, and not expect you to either protect a portion of fraction of what you have, or say upgrade everything for it to be effective.
I mean, I will say this about, you know, some of the critical infrastructure stuff. I was listening to, I think it's the guys behind Run Zero. I think that's the company. He was talking about how, you know, like seeing something in critical infrastructure that's now connected to the internet. The only thing you can see is that I can make it do this or that, but I don't know what either of those things are. And I don't know what it is, but now I can see it. So now I can toggle this switch that opens a dam or closes a dam, but I have no idea. So in those cases, we're talking about like operational, you know, technology that's older than most of the IT or the IoT stuff that we use today. Like, you know, it was created before the idea of the internet 50 plus years ago. Do you think we need to upgrade that, or do we need to do a better job of providing better naming convention? It's like, I think that there are people out there that end up in having done something out of curiosity that causes bad things to happen, because I mean, we've seen kids get into systems and go, oh, this is cool. Click, no idea what click did. They just wanted to find out what would happen. Had it said, this is, you know, if it had a little bit more information to it, you know, the double-edged sword, I mean, I feel like sometimes we just don't have enough information at our fingertips to make better decisions, because what we are monitoring isn't telling us very much.
I mean, so we spoke about the negative aspects of AI or LLMs. I mean, this is where that becomes so much more useful, right? It's going to be hard to come up with standard naming conventions and enforce them. That we're talking about a decade-long process, right? So
we got plenty of time.
Part of what we do for our discovery and classifications is leverage LLMs. Right, because they're so much more powerful in looking at the data asset and looking at the context and saying, hey, this is what this most likely is going to be. Right. So there is certainly an opportunity to be able to do that at scale on a more reasonable time frame using technology to achieve where we need.
So now you're getting into making sure that LLMs are being built in such a way that they maintain the integrity.
Yeah. And I mean, so again, I mean, LLMs, it's not people kind of tend to focus on one aspect of LLM, right?
Sure.
I mean, if you think about the entire process end to end, it starts from data collection, data processing, data storage, data persistence, the cleansing and sanitization of a prompt, the sanitization of the output, validation that there's no copyright or sensitive confidential information in there, and then pushing that for consumption. So we're talking about an end-to-end a process, right? Like everything else. We are happy to say that we're up there early building that end-to-end platform that enables what we refer to as trusted interactions with LLM.
So you have to teach people to think differently, right? Because I think about, like, if I'm a great Python programmer, that doesn't mean I understand what's going to happen when, you know, you go in and log into your ChatGPT prompt and you start asking questions. It may not know how to process that, but you keep asking the questions and suddenly it's like, oh, that does make sense. I can totally give you an answer for that. Yes. And the reality is it shouldn't have given you, it should have been like alarms going off telling people like, what is being asked is not okay for anybody to ask.
Exactly.
And if it's allowed to continue, well, now it's also corrupting the model.
The model, yeah. I mean, think about this. We've trained an entire generation of developers, right, and coders to not worry about security and privacy because everything was automated in the thing. It just became simpler where they said, I just need this answer. I'm going to get it. I'm not going to think about it. So in that context, you want to be able to make sure that all of this is automated, that they're operating within an environment that takes care of all of that. Because expecting every developer or coder out there to be cognizant and aware of this is not practical.
Yeah, but you remember if you go back in time to the days when we used like, you know, C# and C++ and you wrote it wrong and it caused the computer to crash when you went to compile it, like they don't have that. That doesn't happen anymore. Right. Like
exactly.
You might slow down. You might actually use something that's like, wow, this is taking really a long time to give me the answer that I'm looking for. But you don't see a reboot. You don't see a
computers don't crash anymore.
No, not like that. And we're using computers on scale. So 10 computers can fail and the other 90 are still up and running.
Up and running and generating either the wrong or the potentially dangerous output.
So we have just a few minutes left. We've talked a lot about you know, how we should go about doing this, I think, differently than what many of us have. And I can tell you, I've got doing a workshop for a group this month on what, how to approach AI, how to approach the risks of AI. And like, one of them is like, you know, what are the questions that you ask when you work with any vendor? Like, you know, one question would be like, just because the vendor doesn't tout that they're an AI company, like ChatGPT, Open, like we know those are AI companies, like that's what their model is, that's their business. But like we could say, you know, if you said Microsoft, you don't automatically say Microsoft and AI in the same statement. But the idea here is like with risk profiling and things along those lines, you might ask questions like, do you use AI in your products? Do you use AI and how does it interact with fill in the blank? What data of mine are you storing? Give me some ideas or some suggestions. Maybe you've got something to share that would help.
Yeah, I
everybody.
Think there's a few basic questions you ask yourself, right? If I'm going to interact with an LLM model, what is my objective? Am I just trying to get a general or a generic response from the data that already exists there, right? If that's the thing, that's one thing. Then am I worried when I do that I'm going to potentially extract and consume copyrighted or confidential information that could put me in legal jeopardy because I inadvertently consumed?
So that first one is like if I was asking about like the FAQ, like it could be a knowledge base.
Yeah.
I'm asking questions much, and it's going to be much more, results will be much better than it just trying to search the text phrase in a database, right?
In
it's
the actually database, yeah.
Using its engine to, yeah. Okay, so then the second one you're talking about, you know, making sure that when you are using these prompts to understand where it's potentially pulling data from so that you don't get in legal jeopardy.
In legal jeopardy. Like, for example, you ask for some images, it gives you a copyrighted image from somebody that you're not aware of, you use it, hey, guess what? You just potentially violated a copyright that you were not even aware of, right?
Well, that's like similar to what we just saw recently with the New York Times, where we had a chat or a language model that literally went behind their gate, scraped all of that data, and of course now, you know, and every right to be upset.
Dollar.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I mean, they have, like to your point, they have a right to be upset because they've spent millions of dollars paying and sourcing this information that not anybody can consume, right?
Well, and not only that, but we're consuming it without knowing where it came from either.
Where
like,
it came
not
from.
Like it says at the bottom, New York Times, copyright. Like,
yeah. The third aspect of it is potentially saying, okay, no, that's fine for the generic or the publicly available information.
Sure.
What do I need to do if I need to leverage LLMs for driving a business process or optimizing a business process within me? Does that include exposing my sensitive data? How do I prevent my sensitive data or confidential information from being integrated with the open source information or the publicly available
sure.
information?
We see this a lot with in the IP space, where you're like, maybe you're building software, you ask a chat prompt for help, you're struggling with, you know, getting your code's not working right. And then of course, suddenly it works great. And you're like, okay, but then what happened to what you put in there? Now has that entire piece of code, heaven forbid it get into the wrong hands. Like, I don't
exactly.
even mean about your software, but like just being able to use that to come after your consumers in the future, because now I've got this piece of code. I understand
yeah.
how you're writing software.
Yeah, you throw in all your data assets in there to generate some kind of a report or a output. Guess what? All of that's in there, right?
So this really gets into, what does it mean to say have private LLMs that you can leverage for the compute function? In a lot of cases, if you're a big organization, you don't necessarily need it to go check with the rest of the world and the LLMs that might be out there. You need it to just compute what you have.
Yeah. And so that leads to the fourth issue here, right, which is bias and skewness in data. How good is your data to give you an accurate, statistically valid answer, right? If you throw all the data in there, have it train your model, right, the proprietary model for you, that doesn't mean that the data set is clean from a bias perspective.
Yeah, the two truths. We saw this in Times and Newsweek, where you show the bar chart or a pie chart, and by the percentage are so close, but they made it look really big. So when it's blown up in scale,
exactly.
It looks like it's
yeah.
way different.
Yep. And just because your prior practices have resulted in you skewing your interactions towards a specific audience segment, that doesn't mean that you want to do it in the future. But if you rely on your data, that's where you're going to end up. So there's a statistics aspect of it that also needs to be implemented while you're training or preparing data sets to make sure that at least that you're aware that there's a bias in the data, so you can account for it or be cognizant that your data is biased.
To some degree, it's kind of like saying you have to do maintenance just like you would on a car. Like, you can't just let the data just continue to evolve on its own without somebody doing an integrity check periodically.
Exactly. And what's a good data set for one organization or for one objective is not necessarily a good data set for another.
Sure. Sure. And in fact, one wouldn't necessarily know unless they understand what's actually
exactly.
the makeup of that data set too. It's very
and,
easy to get excited about it.
And so here's the biggest problem that underlies all of this stuff, right? Resources or skills needed to make this happen. You're taking what an organization has within it and saying, now we've got a new set of objectives, technologies, and capabilities. Can they adapt to it? Or do you go look for a platform that normalizes all of this, but puts this information in a consumable form in front of the people that are sitting there and saying, this is what the data says it is. Here's the potential bias in there. Here's the security problems. Here's how do you protect yourself. I think
what you just said is kind of our reality, right? Like, how many people could make a great pie chart in an Excel spreadsheet yesterday? Now they have Copilot and they can make pie charts all day long.
Exactly.
Doesn't mean they should be making pie charts.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. This was great. You really opened my eyes to a few things on the risks of AI and LLMs, and also the potential that it brings with it. So for those of you listening, this has been an episode of MSP 1337. Thanks, and have a great week.